friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. We're now less than 1 month away to the kickoff of the World Cup football tournament in Russia. In the opening match, June 14th in Moscow, Russia will host Saudi Arabia. That will be followed by three matches the following day, June 15th, and two of them involve African teams. The Pharaohs of Egypt, featuring Liverpool star Mohamed Salah, will face Uruguay. Morocco will meet Iran. And in what promises to be a very exciting encounter, Cristiano Ronaldo in Portugal, the reigning European champion, will play 2010 World Cup winner Spain. The venue for the World Cup's opening match and the final on July 15th is the 81,000-seat Luzhniki Stadium in Moscow. The stadium hosted a Russia Love Soccer event over the weekend, and other football-themed promotions are being held in Moscow. David Glenn is a British tourist visiting the Russian capital.
But my feeling is that it's ready. It feels okay. It feels safe. It feels organized, clean, and nice and tidy. It's incredibly impressive to look at.
I mentioned Egypt and Morocco. The three other African teams that will be in Russia are Senegal, Tunisia, and Nigeria. As part of their warm-up for Russia 2018, the Super Eagles of Nigeria are scheduled to host the Democratic Republic of Congo May 28th in an international friendly match in Port Harcourt. Ahead of the match, Nigerian fans have expressed concern about the recent outbreak of the deadly Ebola disease in the DR Congo. Seyi Akinwumi is the first vice president of the Nigeria Football Federation. Reporter Iron Mike Imbonye asked him, "Have you taken steps to protect Nigerians?"
Yes, we have. I mean, we're Nigerians and we don't want to jeopardize the health of Nigerians. So we have notified the DR Congo, the president and the president of the DR Congo Federation, both sit on the CAF committee. So I know they've spoken, but beyond that, we've also written to the Federation and also written to the Ministry of Health. So we're going to have them tested when they come in. But don't forget that most of their players are coming from abroad anyway. So, but we don't want to risk anything. So we put everything in place.
Are you now telling Nigerians not to express or entertain any fears regarding the international friendly when they come here?
There's no reason for fear at all. 100%. We're covering every single person that comes into Nigeria before they get here and when they get here and even when they're leaving. So there's no reason to fear at all. We're told that this whole noise and news that we hear about it is in one remote village in DRC Congo. It's not the whole of Congo and it's not even in the main places. But we are as conscious as any Nigerian regarding our health.
Talking about the World Cup proper, what has the build-up been like from the part of the Nigerian Football Federation?
I think what we've done is prepared better than ever, I think, in terms of the LFF position. We have prepared everything, you know, financially, in terms of giving them the necessary support, the players and the crew. So travel arrangements, accommodation arrangements, their bonuses, everything is on course. So all they have to go there to do is play football. We're quite happy with where we are so far. We have no cause for worry. And if there's any worry that comes along, then I'm sure it has to be minor. I will cope with it.
As a member of the federations, are you scared? Is the federation scared about the countries we are playing in our group?
As an individual, first of all, I have no fear. As a federation, I don't think we have any problem. We have the talent. And let's not underrate our boys. We have the talent. We saw them this weekend. All of them are scoring, you know. We have good players, and they're young players, and they're fit players, and we have a squad, and we have a good coach. So we have as good a chance as anybody. We've played Poland, who's number 6 in the world, and beaten them. We've played Argentina. We've beaten them. Those two games, before we played them, I'm sure people were worried that it can happen. But football is football. You know, somebody wants to win and somebody wants to lose. So we don't have anything here. As long as our players give their all, we're satisfied.
Talking about the youth policy of the NFF, can we comfortably say that it is working out now, given that Nigeria is presenting one of the most youthful sides in this World Cup?
It is certainly working. We said it a few years ago that the World Cup, that we want to lower the average age of our super eagles. And that's what we're doing. But we're not yet, it's not yet hooray. We're working on something that has been very, very entrenched for a long time. So we're working on it.
That's Seyi Akinwumi, the first vice president of the Nigeria Football Federation. And he was talking with reporter Iron Mike Imbonye in Lagos. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Meanwhile, the Nigeria Football Federation has released a 30-man provisional list for the World Cup. Nigeria's German manager, Gernot Rohr, will need to drop 7 players by June 4th when the final 23-man World Cup teams must be finalized. As expected, Coach Rohr included John Obi Mikel, the 31-year-old captain of the Super Eagles, who is now based in China with the club Tianjin Teda. Chelsea man Victor Moses is also on that provisional World Cup squad, as are a couple of other English Premier League players, Kelechi Iheanacho of Leicester City and Alex Iwobi of Arsenal. Moses was Nigeria's top scorer in 2018 World Cup qualifying with 3 goals, while Iheanacho and Iwobi had 2 goals each. Italy-based striker Simeon Nwankwo also was named to Nigeria's provisional World Cup squad. The 26-year-old Nwankwo could soon be making his first international appearance for the Super Eagles. He's coming off a breakthrough season in Italy, where he scored 7 goals for the club Crotone. In addition to that friendly match against the Democratic Republic of Congo on May 28th, Nigeria has lined up friendly World Cup warm-up matches against England on June 2nd and the Czech Republic on June 6th. The Super Eagles are in Group D in Russia, along with Croatia, Iceland, and 2-time World Cup champion Argentina. Nigeria will play Croatia June 16th in its first World Cup match in Kaliningrad, Russia. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. In more World Cup news, defender Rafael Marquez could play in a 5th World Cup after he was selected for Mexico's 28-man preliminary squad. If the 39-year-old Marquez makes the final 23-player list, he'll join Mexican countrymen Antonio Carvajal, Lothar Matthäus of Germany, and Gianluigi Buffon of Italy as the only players to appear in 5, count them, 5 World Cups. Meanwhile, Peru captain Paulo Guerrero has been banned from playing at the World Cup in Russia because of a positive doping test he said was caused by contaminated tea. The 34-year-old Guerrero is Peru's all-time leading scorer with 32 goals. In December 2017, Guerrero tested positive for cocaine, and he received a 1-year ban by FIFA, World Football's governing body. FIFA later reduced the ban to 6 months, which would have made Guerrero eligible for the World Cup. However, the Court of Arbitration for Sport says it upheld an appeal by the World Anti-Doping Agency to extend Guerrero's 6-month FIFA ban to 14 months, ultimately ruling him out of the World Cup tournament. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Turning to African wrestling, South Sudan recently hosted a 2-week tournament that attracted wrestlers from 3 of its states, as well as its capital, Juba. A South Sudan wrestling official says the competition provided some good-natured fun and helped build peace among the predominantly pastoralist communities. Reporter Manyang David Maiar has this feature for us from Juba.
Wearing colorful traditional dresses, girls and women from the Terkeka and Jonglei state communities sing pep songs to cheer on the wrestlers at Juba Football Stadium. Terkeka state wrestler Wernyang Guy's entire body is painted with hash from head to toe, mixed with burnt cow dung, his muscles fit to burst. Guy dodges into the green football stadium with his supporters cheering on him. Minutes later, Jonglei wrestler Lual Mawut follows suit, wearing a leopard skin. As the referee blows the whistle, the two young men lock horns, twisting their arms around each other, their muscles pulsing as they try to gain the upper hand. In a few seconds, each wrestler falls down on their sides. The referee from Eastern Lake State calls the match a win for the Terkeka State wrestler, prompting loud cheers and applause from the Terkeka side. The Terkeka wrestlers went on to win the second and third matches as well. But when the fourth set of wrestlers walked into the arena, Jonglei's Gongich Achaknai put away his Terkeka counterpart, sending the Jonglei state side into wild celebrations. ...28-year-old Terkeka wrestler Mayom Jangara won the last match, sealing a win for the Terkeka side for this year's inter-state wrestling competition. Lual Deng Akoi, who runs the South Sudan Wrestling Federation, which organized the event, says the competition encourages peace and reconciliation among the three pastoralist communities.
We want our youth to be together, so that whenever you are moving from a neighbor to a neighbor, then there should be no problem among themselves. Like now, they have exchanged their contacts and they are calling themselves through phones. How are you doing? How did you wake up? How do you feel after the wrestling? This is the good of this.
Akoi says it costs 6 million South Sudanese pounds to transport, accommodate, and feed the more than 60 wrestlers, and he considers it money well spent. Juba Town Mayor Stephen Wani says the tournament is one way to support the national dialogue.
It's cementing the ongoing peace. It's cementing the will of the people of South Sudan. We need these activities to continue in the different field of games, because we believe through these activities our people will soon come together again.
Relations between the communities have been strained since fighting broke out in 2013. Last year, more than 30 people traveling from Juba to Bor were killed by unidentified gunmen along the Juba-Bor road. Armed Munderi youth were accused of carrying out the attack on passengers who were primarily from Bor. In the fear of Dinka-Bor retaliation, hundreds of people were displaced from their homes in the Jemeza area in Terkeka State. Jale Magrunyin Pitya is from the Munderi community. Speaking in Arabic, he says wrestling competitions like this one could help end conflicts between the two communities.
You see, if you touch your enemy's body during wrestling game like this, your heart unites together with him in peace. I tell my people of Mundari to gently throw down people of Jonglei and people of Lake State. Don't break them, because wrestling is like sugar. It is very sweet. Let no one break the leg of his brother.
Wrestling fans Atanyigai from Bor agrees.
This is the game equivalent to football for people in town. And this is bringing peace by knowing each other and making friends. We have known people like But Apor, Ngong Agot, Lado Mayom, and Agot Nyang. These are people we have now known.
The winners were given with a trophy, but organizers say the biggest achievement for the wrestlers and their fans was peace and reconciliation between the three communities. For VOA News, I'm Manyang David Mayar in Juba.
Thanks, Manyang. I enjoyed your wrestling feature. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. In National Basketball Association playoff action Monday night, the defending champion Golden State Warriors defeated the host Houston Rockets 119-106 in Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals. Reporter Adam Spillane tells us more from Houston, Texas.
The Golden State Warriors lead the Western Conference Finals 1-0 after a 119-106 win over the Houston Rockets in Game 1. Kevin Durant led the Warriors with 37 points on 14 of 27 shooting.
Nothing really changes. We know it's a long series, a 7-game series, so we know they're going to come out with a lot of energy next game, try to even this thing up. So, we just got to stay focused and be patient out there and continue to keep playing hard.
Klay Thompson added 28 points, connecting on 6 3-pointers. Stephen Curry added 18 points and 8 assists. James Harden's 41-point, 7-assist night led Houston. He made 14 of 23 field goal attempts, 5 of 9 from behind the 3-point line. Adam Spillane, Houston.
Thanks, Adam. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Meanwhile, the NBA's Eastern Conference Finals resume later Tuesday night in Boston, Massachusetts. The Boston Celtics host the Cleveland Cavaliers in Game 2 of another best-of-seven series. The Celtics thrashed the Cavs in Game 1, 108-83. Joining us now from Boston is Candace Buckner, who covers the Washington Wizards for the Washington Post newspaper. Candace is covering Celtics-Cavs this week in Boston. Candace, thanks for joining us on The Sunny Side of Sports.
Thanks for having me.
I guess Boston fans are feeling pretty optimistic after that 25-point beatdown in Game 1. What's the mood there in Boston?
They're always optimistic. They think they invent sports over here. But I imagine that after that performance, they would be very excited. Of course, outside of Boston, this team has been written off. And that was one of the big storylines before the game. I've never seen this before, and I've covered NBA for a while now. But the game ops ran a video before the game. It was just a supercut of national media people writing them off and saying, going as far as, they're not even going to win in the first round against the Milwaukee Bucks. And, of course, that fired up the crowd because they like to believe that everybody's against them. Every fan base likes to believe that. But for this one in particular, there's some truth to that. There's not a lot of people who would have predicted the Celtics would be at this spot.
Gordon Hayward suffered a season-ending injury in the opening game of the season. Then they lost Kyrie Irving, their star guard. Has it surprised you, Candace, they've made it to this stage?
Absolutely. I think when it was announced that Marcus Smart would potentially miss the first round, and of course Kyrie was out, that teams were trying to get to that seventh seed to play the Boston Celtics and potentially knock them off. The teams that I cover, the Washington Wizards, they couldn't get to the seventh seed, and I think that at that time I was thinking that was their only opportunity to get past the first round because, obviously this team is wounded, and you would think that being a more talented team, the Wizards could have knocked them off. But I was wrong in that line of thinking, and there's no team really in the East, and I'm going to throw the Cavs in there, that can beat the Celtics. However, the Cavs still have the greatest player of this generation in LeBron James, so that's their wild card, and that's why they still have a chance, and that's why people should not write off the Cavs just yet.
Let's talk about King James. Kind of a quiet 15 points in Game 1. Overall, I think he's averaging over 34 points a game in the playoffs. Do you think LeBron will make some adjustments in Game 2?
Oh, absolutely. And he said after the game that traditionally he likes to treat Game 1s as a fill-out session, just kind of see what the defenses are throwing at him, get used to it. And in this case, you know, he saw multiple defenders, although Marcus Morris was the primary guy. There were times when he was backing down Terry Rozier, or when Marcus faced some foul trouble, Jaylen Brown was on him and not giving anything away. So there's multiple guys he has to go against now that he knows that they're going to throw pretty much the whole entire team at him. I'm sure he's going to adjust, and I would not be surprised if you see like a patented or one of those traditional King James type games.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. I'm talking with Washington Wizards writer Candace Buckner of the Washington Post newspaper. Candace is in Boston for Game 2 of the playoff series between the Boston Celtics and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Candace, how much credit do you give Celtics coach Brad Stevens for the team's success this season?
Yeah, I like to give him all the credit, but Stevens being who he is, I really do think, you know, he's not putting on a show when he says this. I really do think he's genuine, that he feels like the praise is silly and it makes him uncomfortable. He does have a couple lottery picks that he's playing in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and he also has a perennial All-Star in Al Horford. So it's not like he's taking a bunch of G League guys and you know, waving his magic wand around them and magically turning them into basketball players. He has players. However, he does deserve a lot of credit. He's a great tactician, probably up there with Rick Carlisle and Greg Popovich in the NBA, and just the way that the system never fails, even though guys fall in and out because of injuries, his system has never failed. So that is the coach, and that is getting his players to it's a cliche, but getting his players to buy in into what he's selling, and they're buying it.
What are your thoughts, Candace, on Jason Tatum? I mean, I've heard more than a few people say that he's the next Celtics superstar.
I'm so impressed with this game, especially seeing it close up. He doesn't look like much as far as like he has a slight frame, but he just makes what I'm impressed with. He makes very strong moves to the rim. And, again, when you just look at him, it's like, okay, he's a kid, he's a baby. He even looks like he needs to be carted for the next 20 years of his life. But he has some strength in that frame of his, and he uses it well, and he's not afraid. I like his outside game. He just has a very mature game.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. I'm talking with Candace Buckner in Boston. Candace is the Washington Wizards writer for the Washington Post newspaper. Candace, in your story on Monday, you gave some props to Marcus Morris, 21 points and 10 rebounds in Game 1. Can you talk about his relationship with his twin brother, Markieff, who plays for the Wizards?
Yeah, they are so similar. And obviously, I cover the Wizards for a living, so I deal with Markieff on a daily basis. And the only way that I can tell them apart is that Markieff now has a thicker beard. But in the way that they speak, the cadence of their voice, their facial expressions, their dry humor, which sometimes comes out, they are totally identical. And it's funny. I wanted to write more about their relationship. But today, game two, Markieff is going to be in attendance. And he had already attended one of the Celtics games in Philadelphia when he showed up in a Marcus Morris Boston jersey. And that's something that Marcus did last year, and he showed up to Markieff's playoff debut in a Markieff jersey. So there's a genuine love there between those guys. You would think, you know, once you grow up, you kind of get over the twin thing. You know, they embrace it. They are each other's best friends and true brothers.
That's Candace Buckner, who covers the Washington Wizards for the Washington Post newspaper. And Candace spoke with me from Boston, where she'll be covering Game 2 of the NBA's Eastern Conference Finals later Tuesday night between the Boston Celtics and the Cleveland Cavaliers. And that wraps up the May 15th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Linus Rimkus. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In a number of developing countries, democracy is in decline. That's because a democratic political culture requires a vibrant civil society sector and an independent media to keep the citizens well informed about the actions and performance of government institutions and officials. Only then do citizens have the means to freely influence public policies. But a free flow of information is anathema to autocrats and would-be dictators. So, despite all the technical developments since the turn of the century, which should improve access to information and social participation, including internet access, greater mobile phone ownership, and easy-to-use digital media platforms, the flow of information is being choked off. In recent years, dozens of governments have passed restrictive laws and regulations that diminish the ability of civil society organizations to register, operate freely, or receive foreign funding. At the same time, print, on-air, and digital news outlets and those who report and publish the news are restricted, shut down, and silenced, while journalists and editors are harassed, attacked, detained, and even murdered. Indeed, according to Freedom House, just 13% of the world's population enjoys a free press, a media environment where coverage of political news is robust, the safety of journalists is guaranteed, state intrusion in media affairs is minimal, and the press is not subject to onerous legal or economic pressures. At the same time, around 67% of all internet users live in countries where criticism of the government, military, or ruling family are subject to censorship. For that reason, the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, is helping to strengthen the legal environment for civil society in over 20 countries, works with local organizations globally to combat growing repression, expand civic space, and strengthen civil society, supports worker organizations to advance worker rights and access to justice in 27 countries, and helps provide civil society, independent media organizations, bloggers, and advocates with mentoring tools and techniques to bolster their information technology capacity and protect their security online. The stakes are high. In some countries, civil society and the media are the only institutions that keep power in check. Through USAID's many programs, the U.S. government works to keep them running.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Lynn Ormudu, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will discuss addressing neonatal sepsis, a bacterial infection in the bloodstream of newborn babies. For your questions or comments, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, as Burundi prepares for a May 17th referendum to extend President Pierre Nkurunziza's time in office, it battles allegations of harassment committed against perceived opponents of the referendum. Critical times in Burundi on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.